Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody, and hope you're having a pleasant President's Day. We appreciate many of you listening in to the broadcast. I suspect many of you are going to be out there having fun. I'm thinking of the skiers up there on up in Snoqualmie Pass, Stevens Pass, up in the the other pass up there, a famous one. I used to live out there. I'm having noticed. They're just going through some massive snow dumps up there, and there's some avalanches. And there's an avalanche of legislation. So I look at those two, and I'm looking at the skiers that are getting swept away. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's a very serious situation. But we always metaphorically look at these things and go, boy, it feels a lot like the legislation that's going on out there. And one of the big discussions out there is, should we keep Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? And the reality is, we've got two industry experts that are going to bring us a full spirited discussion on this hot topic. As we go into this election season, as David Stevens refers to it, the silly season, we're going to be really getting into a discussion about this. Housing has got to be front and center and a part of this discussion as it relates to the economy. You can't ignore housing, therefore you can't ignore the mortgage industry. And so Fannie and Freddie have been integral to be a part of that. Les Parker with Parker & Associates, Parker & Company, and Don Salmon of TBI, the subsidiary of Toll Brothers Mortgage, as Toll Brothers the builder, their mortgage subsidiary. Don is the president of it, and he'll be on later to discuss that. So we're really excited to have both of them on the program. Just the pre-call, just listening to some of the bantering back and forth is really, we're going to have a great broadcast today as we get into that hot topic. It's President's Day, so the markets are closed, and guess where Joe Farr is? Well, he is not on the radio program. He is out enjoying the day off. But Joe's comments that he wanted me to share with you is today, markets are closed, duh. And but it's a lot going on with the Greek deal. It's the Greek debt deal that's out there. Watch that. It's going to be expecting to affect our markets. If all goes as expected, they should be announcing a new agreement that has some aid in it. The last, the least of the of which will be Greece's bonds and how they mature. That may not be a big market mover, but Joe said definitely pay attention to what's going on. If the talks collapse, as some are reporting that it might, then we could see a flight back to safer assets such as the mortgage-backed securities, and we'll see an improvement in pricing there. So Greece, again, continues to be a bunch of a focus. It is going on right now, and maybe Les, who gives us a great, publishes a great article, or a great news flash or update each week, each day, will comment on it and give us some more update on what's going on in that here just a little bit. Let's talk about the week ending September, we're not there yet, thank God, February 17th. There was an overall improving on the outlook for the Greek debt deal, so there's some optimism about that, caused investors to switch to a riskier assets and began to cause the market, as a result, fell off by a quarter point last week. Stock market rose. The Dow closed at about 12,950, the highest it has been since May of 08. So a lot of people who are looking at the market as an indicator of something optimistic is been encouraged by that. Better-than-expected economic news also pushed MBS prices lower. Jobless claims, housing starts, retail sales, ex-auto, all this is upbeat in its expectations, and we're anticipating where the market might be going. Again, I'm sitting and thinking as I'm looking over these notes and sharing these with you, Les Parker's on the phone. He writes about all this stuff. I'm going to cut this short and I'll let him bring it on here in a little bit. When we get into the hot topic, he can give us his perspective on the market before we get into our discussion. But as the Feds are expect inflation to be moderate, therefore the trend is still higher. The trend to be a higher is still pretty strong. Next week, what we got coming up this week is is really going to be continuing to focus on Europe. The calendar is light as far as economic events. Wednesday, we have existing home sales. Thursday, we have jobless claims. Friday is new home sales and consumer sentiment. Always interesting to see where those are. And then the Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And so look forward to hearing and seeing what goes on. Again, Joe, wherever you're at, we hope you're having a wonderful day out there and a good holiday. We appreciate you being a regular part of the broadcast and wish you the very best. Folks, we'll be right back and right after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLand delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLand, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLand today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. Man, I don't know. I have to get my mouth moving here a little more effectively. I sure bungled out on Alice. I'm going, thank God Alice is here. I'm going to have to work through that. But anyway, apologies to Joe. He's going to go, man, I got to hurry, get back. I can't let Dave do that again. It's good to have you on the program, Alice. And I know there's a lot to report. So go ahead. Let's get into the legislative update.
Oh, you did fine. Yep, it's always crazy trying to talk about the markets because there's so much going on. But thank goodness it's a little quieter today. It gave me a chance to kind of catch up on everything that's been going on. Last week, I reported about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau having to refile all the regulations, right? So literally,
yep.
Truth in Lending, every one of them has to get resent in order to kind of change who the regulator is. So previously the regulator was HUD in some of them, and that wording needs to be pulled out, and we put in CFPB instead. So they're definitely making their place in the market by getting their name in all the regulations, for those of you who are hoping they might still go away. But the idea in this last week, I was talking about one of the components I'd been reading in TILA relating to loan officer compensation. And in the rule, which of course I read them all because that way you guys don't have to. You can just go out and listen to the program. Alice will have read them. Well, once in a while I read too fast, and that's what I did last week, where it was talking about that they were changing the statement of and to or in the main body of the text in the definition of for compensation for originator. And I just want to make sure folks understand that it still is an or test for is my originator paid based on closings or paid on commission. Last week I said and that kind of made a few people nervous as they were going, wait a minute, I have loan officers on salary. I thought I didn't have to worry about all these other rules, and that is still correct. So just wanted to make sure I had that clarification. We'll continue to read and watch, but that means you just have to listen to more than one program, right, Dave?
Yep, that's exactly right.
If you keep listening. A couple other points. A while ago, we reported that HUD had a proposed rule out there to allow the Farm Credit System institutions to participate in FHA mortgage. They have withdrawn that proposal. A lot of discussion, obviously, centered around FHA's, viability right now, and everybody very nervous about the fund. And so the last thing they're going to try and push through is being able to allow other entities in that program. Now, FHA, we'll talk about in a minute, did change and update some of their lender approval requirements, but that's not in our rules discussion right now. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, it is next. It must be the day. I'm doing it too. FHA did clarify, for those of you who saw Mortgagee Letter 12-2 that came out and clarified that FHA approved lenders may not have to go through DE approval, that you could essentially be an FHA-approved lender and sit in this sponsored third-party originator status still and fund your loan. I was on the phone with somebody this morning going, I don't get it. This almost feels like they went right back to having loan correspondence. They did have to issue this clarification because before this mortgagee letter, only supervised entities were being allowed to not pursue the full DE, and they were being allowed to fund their loans. So as of February 10th, it's very clear whether you are a supervised or non-supervised lender. If you have your FHA approval, you can fund the loan. But it also clarifies very brightly, for those of you who don't have it, you can't fund, and hopefully no one's trying to work their way around that. So the mortgagee letter, I think, helped clarify some things, although it now still did make a middle ground that's better than the previous loan correspondent approval status. At least now you still have to go through net worth requirements. You still have to go through experience requirements. FHA is going to watch you, but those of you who are sponsoring FHA-approved lenders, you still have to monitor that entity just as any other sponsored third-party originator. So if you have any questions on that, don't hesitate to give us a call. Okay, now to the legislative front. Back on the table for the tax cut extension, Dave Stevens issued a press release to all the members, and I think it was very helpful for me anyway, that we have to make sure we're getting through to Washington to stop looking at the G-fee increase as a way to fund the, you know, taxpayer the tax cut extensions through December 31st. So check the MBA's press release, pass it on to your congressman, make sure that you're making your voice heard. We don't need another increase in the G-fee. Now, another piece, a couple pieces of legislation, Dave. I want to let people know that we are watching. Of course, certainly on my list is the, if you key up in govtrack.us, there are like 58 pieces of legislation that reference Fannie and Freddie.
Wow.
52. So I can't wait to hear what Don Salmon and Les Parker have to say about all that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Battle out, you know, should any of that go away. So I'm just going to reference right now the other ones that we're watching. Senate Bill 1408 was placed on the Senate calendar. Now, that doesn't mean that anything's truly going to happen to it yet, but we do need to watch this Data Breach Notification Act of 2011. Those of you who think you have Graham Leach Bliley policies all in place, that's great, but a lot of lenders may not have a true notification policy spelled out, and that's what this is going to do. Graham Leach Bliley says you have to make sure that you've got a privacy policy. This is going to take it a step further as to how far you have to go in notifying customers and set boundaries for all of that. We're also watching a few pieces of legislation. Another one, Senate Bill 2093, Preserving American Home Ownership Act. That was just introduced. I love this. Shared Appreciation Modification Mortgage Proposal.
Wow.
Right. Just what I think a lot of people are going to sign up for that. What do you think, Dave? And I'm being sarcastic, by the way. Back on the table also is trying to get the mortgage insurance tax deduction extended. So we will watch that for you as well as watch legislation that is trying to attempt clear regulatory standards for mortgage servicers. I have a couple more quick updates. Anti-money laundering rules go into effect for lenders August 5th. Make sure you've got that on your calendar. I am going to be conducting a webinar for the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association, and any of the, I think there are some free ones out there as well, you know, as well as ours. So feel free to check around. You do need to, if you're a lender, understand how to file a SARS report. There's some really good information out there on the web. At the main website for FINRA, for the financial, FINRA.org, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. They have really good stuff on their website for you to be able to do this all on your own. FHA change indemnification requirements, termination authority, use of neighborhood watch, all that goes into effect actually this Friday. So make sure you've checked that, you know what you're in for. And last but not least, FHA MIP is due to increase April 1st, so make sure you are ready. We are supposed to get a mortgagee letter not until March 1st. Got to love it. You're going to have a whole 30 days to hope your software and all your loan programs can handle it. So it's not a bad idea to start looking at it now before the mortgagee letter comes out. We think it's just going to be an annual increase. We think there's going to be an extra tier, though. For those of you on the West Coast and East Coast that have $625,000 loan limits, you're going to also have a new 25 basis point jump in your annual MIP. Dave Stevens did say we might expect a total premium structure change and a potential small increase to the upfront MIP. So it's going to get more expensive. Hopefully they put in a component to reduce streamline refi MIP, and we'll watch that for you and keep you up to date. So watch for the March 1st mortgagee letter.
Well,
anyway,
I tell you,
that's enough for one day.
There's a lot in there. You know what I was thinking about? I wanted to interject, but I'm going to wait till the end. Was on Senate Bill 2093, the Preserving American Home Ownership Act, where it talks about shared appreciation. Well, my cynical mind started thinking about this. Alice, it's like we already have shared depreciation, so we the taxpayers are stepping in where there's be depreciation. Obama's bringing us a shared depreciation, so it only seems logical that we do have a shared appreciation, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Are the banks really sharing in depreciation as much as they
should? Well, I don't know. If they do forgiveness principal reduction at the taxpayers, at the bond share, that the shareholders or bondholders expense, that's in our new program.
Yeah, and we don't have anything in writing on that yet. Also, March 17th, we're supposed to be hearing more on the new HARP 2.0 program. We'll talk about that in the next programs. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot out there, Allison. I know. Thank you so much for you and your staff bringing and reviewing all this. It is, I keep thinking, I use this analogy, this metaphor. We've been gone to saying it's like a traffic report, and it's just congestion. This stuff's moving through, and it's moving through quickly. So it may be more like you are a traffic controller at something like O'Hare Airport, watching all the planes and trying to keep them all moving and where they're going. Yeah, no kidding. It's just amazing. And I wish we had the button to be able to delay some of this. But thank you so much for you and your staff bringing this to us each and every week. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. Alice brought it up. We've got Don Salmon and also Les Parker talking to us here a little bit later in the program about the pros and cons of keeping Fannie Mae around, Freddie Mac around. It's going to be a great discussion. I want to stay tuned for it. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Excuse me, this is Dave Lickin'. I just choked on a cup of coffee. One of the things you rules is don't sip on a cup of coffee just before you turn on the mic. It's just one of those things you should know how to do with live radio. Good to have you back with us. We've got our very own prophet doctor out here ready to talk to us about some things that a lot of people want to hear about. And in fact, I get a lot of comments when I'm traveling on the road. I get a lot of people going, appreciate Alice, man. It's so valuable to update him and what's going on with interest rates, what Joe has and Alice has. But Andy's comments about how to be more profitable, what are the practical steps, says, really dial into what some of the things he has. And he says, sometimes it's like, ouch, I'm not doing that. So, Andy, Prophet Doctor, good to have you on the broadcast with us.
There are a lot of people
talk about, we're going to do something. But it's the activities behind the doing something where a lot of people fail, Andy. And I want to get the Prophet Doctors to connect activities with results. Could you comment on that?
Wow. What a great topic, Dave. I wonder how you knew we were going to talk about that.
I don't know. Maybe it's that email I read earlier.
Well,
appreciate it. It's a really good topic, though.
I was thinking about that this weekend, actually. And one of the things that came to mind is we talk about, and what I had written down was, actions are the measure of our intent and our desire. And people may think, well, but no, wait a second. My intent and my desire is to do this grand thing. Well, but you know what? Our actions are the measure of our intent and our desire.
That's right.
It's not what we say, it's what we do. You've heard the phrase, actions speak louder than words. Well, that's just another way of saying actions are the measure of our intent and desire, because ultimately our intent and desire will drive what we actually end up doing. So we can
have
a business.
That sounds so familiar. My wife uses that with me a lot. I don't know about others, but anyway.
Well, things and personalities have the greatest intent and the inability to follow through on much of anything. No, just kidding.
I wonder who's saying
one of the groups. Well, along with you, Mr. Lickin.
Yes, you are.
But anyway, we have the greatest intent, and then we both talk about how all the reasons why we didn't do what we said we were going to do. you know, I start my own business, and I want to run my business that follows the rules. I want to start a mortgage company. I own a mortgage company. I want to run a business that follows the rules. Well, you know what? The NMLS Mortgage Call Report financial condition section is due in a little over a month. And
yep.
So you know what? It's not what I want to do. It's the actions that I take to do the things that are required to accommodate what I want. So is your report ready to go? Are your accounting systems built? Are they tuned up like they need to be? We've been talking about this for a year. Have you really
yeah.
taken the actions to do the things you have to do? Because at the end of the day, actions drive results. So the things that we accomplish are the measure of our activity. So what we end up, you know, you run a race. If you win, you win. If you didn't win, you didn't. So if we want more production, we have to do the things that generate more production. I know there's a lot of folks struggling right now that have a wholesale and trying to deliver wholesale through aggregators. You know what? I know, Dave, you've been talking about that as a risk for 18 months, and people are just now trying to do something about it. You know, it's not, don't talk about, oh, yeah, we'll get to that, or, yeah, we're going to talk about that, or, yeah, let's think about this next week. No, no, it's do the things you have to do today to accomplish what you want to accomplish to get the results, because that's what it comes down to. And I know, Dave, you and I and our partners in our company, it comes down to results. And in business,
absolutely.
Results, it's really all about results. Whether if it's your kids or whatever it is, it's really about results. And so in a business, results are measured by profit. So it's really very simple. If you make a profit, you did well. If you didn't make a profit, you did bad. It's very binary. Profits are good. Not making profits are bad. And profit is what drives ROI. And this is where I'm going. And Alice is probably going to be rolling her eyes about this time. It's about ROI. It's return on investment.
Never
return
heard
on
that
investment.
From the profit doctor before.
No,
never,
right
ever,
now
ever.
I'm thinking we need to have Andy write a book, Andy's Fables. I'm typing them all down, Andy. Actions are the measure of our intent and our desire. Yep. Keep going. Sorry.
Yep. Well, you know, and actions drive results. Results drive profit. Profit drives ROI. Return on investment. Return on investment is the measure of the profit relative to the investment made by the owners. So, when we boil this all down, all of our actions should drive ROI. ROI can be shareholder value. ROI can be however you want to look at it, but it's return on investment. And all of our actions need to drive ROI. Every action we take that drives results should drive ROI. So we need to think about this in everything that we do. It's important as we plan our day, focus on what's going to drive revenue, what's going to reduce expenses, what's going to increase profit, and ultimately drive ROI, because it really comes down to our actions are measured by our intent and our desire. Our true intent and our true desire are measured by our actions. It's not what we say. It's what we actually accomplish. It's what the results are and what the ROI is.
Dave. Now, well, it is. It's good. It's a good reminder. But I tell you, you know, you bring up the call report and the fact that the financial report is due here in a month. A lot of people say, their goal is just to stay in business right now. Let me tell you, if you do not file that call report accurately, if there's deficiencies, mistakes, sloppiness in that, it's going to have a huge consequence. It could literally cost you a state license. And if it's in your home state, you're out of business.
Right.
Folks, it is very, very serious. So your philosophical little reminder today is right spot on. And so thank you so much for bringing it to us.
Of course, Dave. My pleasure.
Folks, we'll be right back with a discussion about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in just a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this message.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. This is February 20th, President's Day. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of us. Tell others in your community about that. about this broadcast, and the benefit it is helping you stay on top of all that's going on. As we look forward to this election season, as I said at the opening of the program, we can anticipate housing, the housing policy of our next president being front and center. No single topic related to that discussion is probably more significant than discussing the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We have two excellent guests with us, Les Parker, who is president of Parker & Company and someone I've known for many, many years, offers a daily understandable, affordable an update newsletter, but he also provides pipeline risk management technology, mortgage servicing right valuations, and MSR accounting tools to really help those involved in managing servicing. And we're putting this program right smack dab in the middle of the discussion about loan servicing. Now, we're not going to talk specifically about loan servicing, but if you have a strategy of considering going into servicing, you'll definitely want to talk to Les and become familiar with his services. And then also joining him is Don Salmon, who is president CEO of TBI Mortgage Company, based out of Horsham, Pennsylvania. Now, TBI stands for Toll Brothers Incorporated. So Don's mortgage company, TBI Mortgage, is a wholly owned subsidiary of the mortgage company. I think I have that right. And he's also the former founder and CEO of Phoenix Mortgage there in Fort Washington. The best part about these two is they have a passion for the industry, but they have differing opinions. So we've invited both of them to bring their opinions, their thought, and their discussion, which it sounds like when I'm talking to Les, it's been going on for a while, and I know it's going to be informative, and I suspect it might be a bit spirited. Don, good to have you on the program. Les, appreciate you both being here. I want to make sure you both hear us and you're on.
Yep, Dave, it's my pleasure. It's Don.
Good, Don.
It's a pleasure
to
be with you.
By the way, Les, before we get into this discussion, do you have any updates on what's going on in the markets and where we have the, your thoughts and opinions about Greece and the debt deal?
Well, I guess we could take the next 30 minutes to address that, but since we only have about 15 seconds, I'll just say that Europe is still the significant issue that the credit markets in the United States are dealing with. I do believe, on economic outlook, I do believe that this is the year of the bottom in housing. It does not mean that we're in the midst of a major recovery. I do think 2013 should be a pretty good year for housing. This is the year of forming a bottom, and so 2013 should look a lot better. But the big issue on the political side is, are we going to be somewhat in a status where we really want more and more government control, or are we going to move away from that towards liberty? And that's really the heart of the issue, and even driving the issues surrounding Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, what should be done.
Well, I think there's clearly a lot is going to be focused on that. I think you're spot on. I did Doug Duncan's slides. Last week, as many of our listeners know, I was in Amelia Island, Florida, and I spoke at the Eastern Secondary Conference Thursday night. Doug Duncan, the chief economist for Fannie Mae, and I had dinner. Had a wonderful conversation, and we were talking about the economy, talking about where things are going, importance of housing, and he really laid out some interesting outlooks about this. But there's clearly a season where housing is going to be determined about the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Les, would you agree with that statement that housing is going to be somewhat pinned to the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Or another way to ask the question is, how important to the discussion of housing and our housing recovery is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac? I'll start with you.
With me?
I think that
Don and I have a different outlook on how critical they are for the future of recovery. But I do not believe it's imperative to have a mixed mission that we've had now for decades with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to continue.
Mixed mission.
So the mission has to now be changed. And I think that's, of course, the big problem. If that mission is going to be changed, does that mean it's no longer a quasi-governmental agency and it's purely just a governmental agency? Or is it become privatized? And that somewhat boils down to that. I do actually somewhat believe in a hybrid. I think that we should privatize the majority of the activities and then have those areas that can use support, such as affordable housing, multifamily, mixed-use properties, to develop a secondary market that we can have a very specific targeted area with sunsets. That's in summary where I think their future is.
Well, Don, where would the housing finance market looked in the past 5 years if we didn't have the agencies?
I think it's interesting, Dave. First of all, based on Les's most recent statement, we're not that far apart. I believe in a lot of what Les just said. But to answer your question directly, to look at what housing would have looked like, more specifically housing finance, take a look at the jumbo market and look at the disparity in geography, look at the disparity among institutions, and the actual dearth of jumbo financing in the last 4 to 5 years, and there's your answer. Without some sort of agency government support, I think you're going to have serious problems at different times.
Well, what about Redwood Trust? I mean, you look at some of the REITs that are out there, Don, that are trying to come in and fulfill some of that market. I mean, will they work without a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac there?
I think it depends. I think it depends on if the government is willing to support a secondary market, then yes. But I think right now there is no secondary market, and Redwood and others, by the way, PennyMac and others, have been trying, and there's some pretty bright guys there who have some pretty good capital behind them. BlackRock's been doing some things, and they're not able to get it kick-started. So if those folks, with all their brains and their market prowess, can't do it, what makes us think that we'll be able to sustain it ourselves without some sort of help from the U.S. government?
Well, actually, the reason why right now that over the last 5 years we've had to have the agencies is because now the agencies are completely owned by the federal government, even though it was technically not that. They're now fully 100% guaranteed. And so it's almost saying that the housing market can only survive if we have fully subsidized, fully guaranteed agencies, and I don't believe that at all. I think the issue becomes what the price is. Now, obviously, if it's privatized, then the price is higher. Currently, the big constraint in the securities market has to do with the fact that we have the federal government completely involved. It's very difficult for an investor to want to put their money into alternative investments that are not guaranteed by the government when they have these government guarantees. So there has to be a wide enough spread for the investor to take that uncertainty.
You know, sitting look at the systemic risk in our industry, and is it increased or decreased by government regulation? That's such a hot topic, government regulation. Increased or decreased? Don?
I think it depends on the government regulation. I think prudent regulation by the government actually will decrease systemic risk. I think anybody who says there should be no government regulation needs to rethink a position. I mean, to take it out of the mortgage industry for a second, and you know, when you drive a car, should the government have regulation that you need to stop the stop sign? The answer is yes. And should they enforce that regulation? I think the answer is yes. Now take that back into the housing market and start at its basis level. Should the government regulate that there shouldn't be discrimination in housing? I think the answer is yes. Then move that on to lending, and are there certain aspects of lending that should be regulated? I think the answer to that is yes. I'm not a guy who wants over-regulation. I don't think they should regulate, for example, what's maybe coming down the pike with QRM and QM. They should not be regulating DTI. They should not be regulating down payment. But should they be regulating the distribution of capital? Should they make sure that there's equal capital or at least capital available in every market in the country? I think the answer to that is yes.
Les?
Well, what we have is a problem of that it's implying that government has skin in the game when, in fact, government does not have skin in the game. Bureaucrats, journalists, and executives at major companies, majorly large companies, do not have skin in the game. They still get paid their bonuses. They still get paid their paycheck if there are bureaucrats. And those that do have skin in the game end up losing their business, or if they're like a soldier who doesn't have much upside, but they're the ones who take the bullets.
So now we're not talking about... Right. Now we're not talking about whether or not there should be a role in government. Now we're talking about how we deploy that role. Should there be skin in the game? I don't think you're going to get a congressperson to have skin in the game. But should you have a senior executive at a major lender have skin in the game? Absolutely. Are they allowed to make mistakes? Sure they can make a mistake. Can they do things that, you know, manipulate stock price or manipulate markets? No, and they should be punished for that. So unfortunately, some of that went on, and I don't think those people were adequately punished. But the question is there a role for government? It's what's the proper role for government?
Well, I would agree with you, Don, that it is a question of what is the role of government. The challenge I have is, and let me give you a real simple example that mortgage originators across this nation and many that are listening to this broadcast are having to deal with right now. And that is the whole concept of best practices. We're getting best practices shoved down our throat by HUD, and then the MBA signed on and said, oh, yeah, these are the best practices. Well, once you codify best practices or codify underwriting, then it becomes just a static item. It doesn't grow. Trial and error ends up growing. We don't end up with changes that actually bring about. Let me bring one other example in the computer industry. Had we had best practices in the computer industry when it came to transferring data, we'd still be dealing with modems instead of having an internet that's robust.
Unless I don't disagree that the government is overstepping its bounds, and it looks like they're going to continue to do that for a while. I would change the argument from should we be measuring and regulating best practices to should we be reporting on and measuring best outcomes. Because I think that's really where the key is.
I think you have to look at how
people, not how people do that, but what's the final end point? How much risk are you taking? I think to allow banks to invest in 100% no-doc negative amortization loans is folly. I think that makes no sense at any level, and I believe that the government at that point should step in and say, no, not on our nickel, not when you have insurance from the federal government. To allow the private sector to do that with private money, I'm all for it.
I do agree with you that government has a if a company gets so large or an industry has some type of systemic risk that the consequence of good things going bad is that the taxpayer will end up having to take the bullet, is the analogy I used earlier. Then I would agree with you there. The challenge is I don't want the government determining outcomes. That's like outcome-based education. I want the government to help us with a foundation, and the foundation is capital requirements. I believe two items are the most critical items for the healthy financial system, and that is full disclosure and adequate capital. And the adequate capital, the larger and larger an institution gets, rather than allowing them to be more and more levered, where they need to be less and less levered because the predictability of risk becomes greater, or the non-predictability of risk, the tail risk, becomes greater and greater. And that's where we end up having an institution that becomes too big to fail. I don't want the government to have to step in and too big to fail. If we can pull that back and make capital rules that make sense to say, let's have community banks, let's have other types of financial institutions have adequate capital, then investors will invest in those smaller institutions that are not too big to fail and be willing to take the risk of capitalism, not go into the too big to fail institutions where there is no downside.
I want to ask this question. Is housing a right? Is it a right? Because I know this. We're going to have politicians running for office listening to this broadcast. And if you were to talk to each of the candidates, would you say that housing is a right of every American?
Depends on how you define housing. Housing, in my view, is a right of every American. Homeownership may not be a right.
Good distinction.
But actual housing is. I mean, even our most abject criminals, we provide housing to. We may not want to live there, but we do provide housing for them. I think. And depending upon your ability to contribute to society, I know that sounds like Mr. Marx, less I get it, but if you are unable to contribute, if you are truly disabled mentally or physically, I believe the United States of America steps up and helps that person. But if you are able to contribute, then I believe we help you with housing if you can't economically handle it yourself, but I don't think we provide it. And as you get into different levels of housing, I think the level of government help goes down, and especially at home ownership, I think there should be less government intervention in home ownership than basic housing.
Excellent. Les, what's your thoughts
on it? Don, I had just about agree with that. I actually think the challenge I have, though, is when we do look at housing as a right, it's something that people have to take care of themselves, and yet if they can't, then how does the government or how society or how does charitable institutions provide that? Now, we do not, because of the growth of government over the last century, a few centuries, we basically decimated the charitable organizations of being that safety net. Instead, in Western Europe and in the United States, we've made government be that safety net. If we're going to continue with that, which there should be more rigorous debate of should we continue that being the safety net or should it go back to the private sector through charitable organizations, which I would prefer to see. But given that there has to be a very lengthy process in this, we're going to keep the safety net. I think we need to move the safety net away from just a transfer of money to people to where then they make a choice to instead say, if you need housing, here's government-provided housing, and it may be a building or whatever it is. Here it is. You can use it anytime you need to use it. This is what you want. This is what you have. If we can commoditize our safety net, if you need food, instead of getting food stamps or getting direct transfer payments where you can buy whatever you want at a grocery store, you have to go to the local government provider of food. And here it is. Here are your basic commodities. If this will keep you alive. That's where you can get it.
Let's get back to home ownership, right? So if you say, you talked a little bit about the role of government in housing and home ownership. So should the government be subsidizing the program? So you talked a little bit about maybe, you know, the kind of the MBA plan where maybe there is a particular product out there that's a hybrid mixed use for low income. You know, is the government, in your opinion, I guess we'll start with, you know, you, Les, in your opinion, it sounds like the government's still a little bit having to be involved, like with the FHA program or some other program, but other than that, privatized. So can I get each of your opinions to kind of sum up on that?
Sure, I will. Where I like to see government involved is establishing free market choices. And where Fannie Mae, in their inception, was great is that they helped establish a secondary market for mortgages. And their role was established early on when they first established the mortgage-backed securities in the late 70s and early 80s. Shortly thereafter, we had what their mission was, but we didn't sunset them. We didn't then move it into the private enterprise for single-family residences. Now, for certain types of commercial mixed use, for some type of affordable, some type of multifamilies, those don't have a clear secondary market to them. We could say, here's your role, establish secondary market. Once the secondary market gets established, then there has to be this transition to a pure market.
Is that FHA or is that some other entity?
Well, FHA is certainly a big role, and I'd really like to see FHA's role significantly diminished. Look at what they've been doing with the significant rises of the MIP, and also really still not adequately funded. When the actuaries look at it, it's not adequately capitalized. You wouldn't have that problem in the private enterprise. It would be adequately capitalized, but guess what? There would be a cost to that adequate capital.
It would be capitalized, or it would be out of business. And if you go back to history and look, why was FHA created? It was created in 1934 in response to the Depression. And if you like 30-year fixed mortgages, take a look at FHA. That entity served this country well for 75 years. It's only been in the past few years where they've had real actuarial problems. There have been some in the past where it's been rumored, but they've been able to overcome them. Why do they have these actuarial problems? Because the housing price decline, the dramatic house price decline, and the glut of foreclosures that they're facing, Let's go back in history and say, why
did
that happen?
Well, I think you have people also talk about that they got a little lenient. You know, they started to follow along as their market share got so low and and the bubble was booming. Everybody was doing no-doc. I mean, FHA was walking around going, does anybody even know we're here? And the seller-funded down payment program really took a hit to their numbers and to their bottom line.
Right. And that's the crux right there. It's not whether or not there should be. It's at what level should there be
participation. Yeah, I think FHA absolutely got a place in this long term, sure. It's just a matter of, okay, do you end up with an entity that can generate revenue from housing? Is in any of this, so is it the government program is just supposed to be able to maintain itself, not make profit, and anything else profit-based has to be privatized?
I think the government's role in housing is to sustain housing at a level. And we can debate about what that level is. Should the government make a profit on it? For example, this 10 basis point debacle that went on to fund the two-month reduction in the payroll tax? Absolutely not, in my opinion. I think that's inappropriate, and I think it's wrong. It was a political deal that will cost taxpayers, middle-class taxpayers, a lot of money in the next 10 years. I mean, think about who uses Fannie and Freddie. It's not the poor because they're not getting mortgages. It's not the rich because they're getting jumbo loans. It's the middle class. You just put a hidden tax on the middle class. I think that is exactly 180 degrees from what should be.
And that's why I said earlier that there has to be disclosure. I believe government involvement in anything, if we're going to have it, have fully disclosed things. That's why taxes should be not hidden and embedded. They should be fully out there. I would like to bring into, there's more, to me I'm looking at this discussion today as more for housing policy and what is the very large picture. And there's really, when we look at the economy, is the economy organic or is it engineered? If it's engineered, then we should have bailouts, we should have heavy government involvement. Engineered would be like making a table. If you have a table and you bang on that table, you eventually are going to destroy it. So therefore, you use the table and you'll lose the table. If you stress the table, you will lose the table.
Alice,
but if you're organic, then you're going to, if you use it, or you'll lose it. So in other words, you have to use it. It's like muscles, it's like bones, and it gets better and stronger. The government tries to make people not go through any stress. And if it delays stress, then it creates a bigger problem when you get out into the tails. That's where my problem is with government involvement. It looks great when everything's within a standard deviation. But when you get outside into the tails, that's where the error risk gets compounded. It all looks great, and you can predict a certain amount of things, and we've gotten better and better at predicting things. So it's the unpredictable that creates the problems, and we can't predict it by its very nature, unpredictable.
Well,
and
I think you said it earlier by codifying the restrictions for, you can't codify this for all the restrictions in the growth. Full disclosures out there by under Dodd-Frank and in part capital. I agree. I think we all agree on the idea that you can't control behavior through housing policy. Government can't control the behavior.
But that is what the government does right now.
Oh, that's
what
they're trying
Fannie
to do.
Mae and Freddie Mac do. That is what HUD does. In fact, I believe this whole housing crisis, in fact, the first question was, well, over the last 5 years, Don and I answered the question, right, what would the housing finance look like over the past 5 years without the agency? Well, it would have looked horrible without the agencies. But if you ask the question differently, how would it have looked over the last 10 years without the agencies, it would have been wonderful because we probably would have avoided this huge meltdown. Because by them dictating underwriting guidelines, by them building AOS models, by creating making the predictable part a little wider, they made tails a bigger risk. And when we got out into the tails, which is what happened with housing prices coming down and other things, that's when we ended up with basically a financial meltdown. And we are bankrupt. The housing industry is bankrupt.
I take issue with one of the things you said, Les. You said that the agencies dictated underwriting guidelines, and I disagree with that. I think people like Countrywide, Angela Mozzolo, dictated those guidelines because they went to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they said, if you won't do this, I'm going to use my political will. First of all, I'm going to take my business to the other company or someplace else, or I'll create my own route. I'll do whatever I do. I will use my political will, and I'll go to people like Barney Frank and Maxine Waters, and I will make you do this. And if you think about who created the original products that sank this ship, think about it. It's WaMu was a bank. Wachovia was a bank. Golden West was a bank. National City was a bank. IndyMax a bank. Countrywide had a bank. These were all banks that were doing this stuff and then sold them to Fannie and Freddie, or sold them through Fannie and Freddie afterwards. A lot of this stuff went on bank portfolio. That's why the banks were out of business. Look at the second mortgages, people like National City. Look at the stuff that WaMu had in their portfolio, Les. I mean, if you think it was only Fannie and Freddie that was doing this, I think we have to rethink that and say who really created this product, who pushed the product through the agencies, and the agencies weren't strong enough to push back because there was too much political pressure coming from certain segments of administration or legislature that required them to take these loans.
Well,
I think that's a great
way to move on.
Let's
move on to the next point, Les. Hang on, Les. We need to move on to – let's go ahead and segue on to the next group of topics. Hey, guys, this is Andy. And what you're just talking about, but the role the banks played in this, in the challenges we just had, you know, we're going to have banks around for a long time, like it or not. And banks, because of their the deposit base, have access to liquidity. What role – are they the proper mechanism to control liquidity and the flow of funds into housing? And how are we going to make this work without Fannie and Freddie?
Think about it. If the banks are the only ones controlling liquidity, what happened in years gone by before you had Fannie and Freddie to areas like the oil patch states where there was no liquidity whatsoever? Look at what happened. What would have happened in the sand states in the very recent past. There would have been zero liquidity in Florida, in Nevada, California. Now, maybe there shouldn't have been as much as there was, but I would argue that wasn't. That was many of the banks that created it. In my view, the banks have to be regulated to the amount of risk that they take, and I think Les and I agree on this. If you're going to take that kind of risk and you're going to put up that kind of capital, but if you leave it only to the banks will do what is in the bank's best interest, not what's in the country's best interest. Fannie Mae served this country for 65 years. Fannie was formed in 1938. They served this country really well for 65 or 70 years, and then it blew up. You have to ask yourself, why did it blow up? What happened? What was the root cause of why it blew up? It's because there was too much pressure put on them to do loans that they shouldn't do. They had inadequate management up top, and they had inadequate regulation. And that's what happened. So if you're going to leave it to the banks will act in the bank's best interest, not in the country's best interest.
Good. I'm glad
that they act
in their own best interest. I don't think that because the government also acts in its own best interest by perpetuating things. They don't have risk to speak of. Bureaucrats don't have risk.
But they can regulate risk.
They should, but see, they don't. They have other interests involved in regulating risk. They don't take the taxpayer. One of the big reasons we have a huge movement in this country right now is for taxpayers to kind of say, "Wait a minute, politicians, we don't want to be the lender of last resort." You may think that the taxpayer should be the lender of last resort, but it shouldn't be. Banks were the major banks, the ones that were too big to fail, had no business operating on the capital ratios that they were operating on.
I agree, and that goes to regulating the amount of capital that banks have in the game. And banks or others, I have
no problem if
a bank wants to create a loan and lay off part of its risk to a REIT or to some other entity. That's fine. I don't think that the taxpayers are the ultimate backstop, especially for those loans that just don't make economic sense, like the no docs at 100 LTV and negative AM and all that good stuff. That's just silly lending.
We agree, but let me add something. I actually think silly lending has a complete role in society.
With private capital, that risk and people can lose.
The subprime crisis that was occurred was when we had players come into the market that had the backstop of the taxpayer in some form or fashion. But when we did subprime before that in the 60s and in the 70s, or actually even further back, I mean back in the 20s, it doesn't really matter. We had finance companies that wanted 18% return or 25% return, kind of depending on what type of loan and all. And they had capital for it. And if those people didn't repay, then they took the loss and they knew how to collect.
Agreed. So the question isn't whether or not Fannie or Freddie or some hybrid of them should exist. It's what risk should they take and what capital should they deploy in relation to that risk. That's the question. So So if you want to put private capital at risk and there's full disclosure and people know I can lose my money, I'm with you. I'm all for you. And get your risk and return in order and you know, pedal to the metal. That is not the role of government, though. The role of government is to make sure that those government-backed entities, i.e. the banks, Fannie, Freddie, are taking prudent risk and are getting a prudent return for that risk. And they have capital to back it up.
Well, I don't think that's the role of government to define what a prudent risk is. I believe that a capital...
If the government money's going to do this...
risk.
If the government money,
I don't want the government involved. That's why
you don't
want
the government have the FDIC.
I would prefer the FDIC was not guaranteeing deposits, but that's also created part of this problem we're in. And by the way, we haven't even seen the end of this crisis, because this crisis is going to play out in pension funds, because we are not going to have enough money to pay the people that think that they're going to have the money in another 5, 10, or 15 years from now.
And if you're right, to the extent that the government is backing pension funds, then the government should limit their risk. If the government is not backing a pension fund, which they do virtually all of them, then the government has no say. If you want to create a hedge fund that the people put their money up and it's at risk and they know the risk and they're willing to take that risk because they think they're going to get a reward. If the things go bad and they lose their money, I'm with you. Government has no role. But you do it through a bank or through a GSE or through a pension fund, government clearly has a role.
The role should be defining capital, which obviously in a certain sense you end up defining a risk because you have to look at it. But you have to really watch out how you define it. I don't want the government saying, by the way, here's your allowable investments, here's not allowable investments. Winners and losers.
No. I won't tell you what you can risk with your money, but I will tell you what the government can risk with my money.
So
if you
really
want to put your money at risk, I'm happy for you. You cannot put the public's money at risk without proper regulation.
So hopefully, Don, we are getting ready to, I know, close here, but I want to make one final. I hope that the United States, is in this critical election that we're on, a second critical one, last one was a major one, this is another one, are we going to continue down the road of being statist? Are we going to really have high government control? Or are we going to move back towards principles of liberty and capital, and that destructive capital. That is, that if someone invests in something, they don't get bailed out. Are we going to move that direction? I hope we move in the direction of saying that bad things happen to capitalists and let there be bad things happen. We should not have bailed out AIG. We should not have bailed out Citibank. We shouldn't have done these bailouts. We shouldn't have done all those different things. Now, you could argue that the government's created the systemic risk. You know, I understand. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don, you have a good counterpunch on that one, so go ahead. I'd love to hear. This is so valuable.
Do you like breadlines? I mean, given the situation at the time, what would have happened had we not bailed out AIG? You would have had a meltdown of epic proportions. And you and I would be talking through Campbell's soup cans and phone lines because all the phone companies would be shut down.
You have to temper
the idealism with reality. If you want to set it up in the future that those things can't happen, maybe we'll figure out a way to do that.
You know,
but when you look at the past, you have
to do
it in the cold light of history and what the facts were at the time. There would have been a meltdown of epic proportions less. That would have been the wrong thing.
I disagree because I would like to see us transition, okay? So, but here's the, it's kind of like if you have a no-burn policy or if you have a fire management burn policy. And that ended up becoming a disaster where they allowed underbrush and they didn't allow there to be natural fires to be able to burn out the dead and the weak and reforestation policy. It was found, same thing for the finance area. We need to allow for stresses in the system to occur so that when we do get out to sales, we will be better at that form. But when the government tries to avoid small stresses, then we end up with bigger problems. So unfortunately, yes, it would have been a huge problem, but we've got to clear out the system somehow.
Let's not confuse AIG
not
with
right
a small
now.
Stress. Let's not confuse AIG with a small stress. That would have been a forest fire, as I said. Yogi Bear could not, or not no, what's his name? Smokey the Bear could
yeah,
not.
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of systemic risk because of regulation and a lot of bad things. But, you know, I hope we can transition out of this. And if they could put Don and I in charge of a lot of things, I'm sure we would be able to get there. Because Don's very pragmatic, and I tend to be pretty theoretical. And I think we'd make a great team. So,
well, unfortunately,
we're going to have to
keep this discussion going into another broadcast because we've flat run out of time. We're in right through the clock here. It's
great.
So valuable. We've had special guests. I got Don Salmon, who's president and CEO of TBI Mortgage, and thrilled to have him here. Again, that's Toll Brothers, a subsidiary of Toll Brothers, the big builder, and also Les Parker of Parker & Company, two experts debating this issue. Folks, it's going to be sent front and central on this. Don and Les, thank you so much for being a part of this broadcast today. Really appreciate you being here and taking the time to be here. Appreciate it.
David, my pleasure, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You bet. I'm going to have breakfast with Rick Santorum on Friday. I am going to make sure he listens to this broadcast. It's so exciting to know that we have the voice in this. So, Don, Les, thank you so much. Have a great week. We got to have the two of you back. Absolutely. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, Les. Appreciate it. You're right. It was going to be a good discussion, and it's like a runaway train. Once we get those two going at it, getting into the discussion, it's point, counterpoint. It's so valuable, folks. This is the discussion, and that's really what this program is about, is to bring the discussion to the forefront. We appreciate you listening each and every week. Special thank you goes to our sponsors, New Penn Financial. Go over and check them out on our website. They're one of the new investors coming into the market. It's there on our website, lickingonlending.com, in the upper right-hand corner. Click on it. Great products. Appreciate you being with us. Have a great President's Day, everybody, and we'll look forward to having you back next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Crowline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.